It's December 27th, 2022, 1409 hours Eastern Standard Time. This is Ward Green, and this is a quick review of the repair on the recycled blue box. The outside of the box is done with a blue electrical tape with goop. Why can I not get that? Why is that not there? What's happening here? There's a light. I'm trying to shine on this. Let's see. Move that back. Some things are in my way here. Just please bear with me here. Let's see. There is the. Why can I not tip it far enough? It doesn't seem to want to show what I'm looking for. See, here we go. I'm tipping it as far as I can, the camera. Okay, let's go up higher. Yeah, there it is. So this is the repair. Yeah, that's showing it. Okay, it goes right down to the bottom of the box. It's a pretty strong looking repair. Now, if I flip it over, I want to show the inside is black electrical tape, right there. Right here, on this side, on that inside of that surface, it's black electrical tape with goop, and that's another reinforcement of that bin. So now I want to put this camera on my tripod here, my stand. There we go. I've got to get it so it's not touching the stop start button. Okay. There we go. I want to show you now. I want to show you what happens when I boot my computer. Before I do that, what do I want to do first? I want to get this bin out of here. I don't want to break it or anything because I'm being. Being too careless, I want to get this out of here. Okay, that's good. Those bins can take a lot of abuse, or they can take a lot of impact, but they can't take a very sudden impact in cold weather, or, you know. And the plastic gets old, I think. I believe the plastic gets old in the sun. We're going to try a boot now. We're going to see whether my computer will boot. So here's the boot sequence. I'm going to let this be the ultimate examination, of course, the ultimate test of this, my new system. Okay, I shut down the browser last night, and look, it booted here. This now is my main monitor. It correctly booted. It didn't take long to boot. I'm going to type in I can't show you that. Hang on. Can't show you my password. I hope you're not seeing any reflection anywhere of what I just did on any of my monitors. Okay, we'll see what happens. I'm booting. It's booting. It came up with Finder. It came up with just not Safari. I mean, it came up with Ikuna. But the other programs didn't come up because I didn't tell them to, right? And I told the system to not, when I went to shut down, so let me show you. When you shut down Mac OS, okay, you say shut or restart, when I say shut down or restart, it has a little dialogue, a little toggle switch. You can reopen Windows when you log back in or not. I did not check that little checkbox, so it does not it was not going to, it was not going to reopen the windows. So that's why I didn't reopen my windows. But instead of that, let's just run Ikuna, which is Command I. Now I'll just click just not Safari and see what happens. There it is. It opened my email. It opened my preferences. It opened the Bible research program. It opened up above FileZilla and my calendar right there. It's got a new email just came in. That's my package was delivered. I have a package in the kitchen that was just delivered earlier. So that notification is outdated now. But the only thing that's not started is Safari, it looks like. I've got over here, yeah, on the other monitor over here, I have the, right here, that program, that's my image capture program on my AOC monitor. So that program has booted also. And so Ikuna works flawlessly, apparently, because it just recalls the position of all my windows that are not Safari. But let's check one more. If I minimize the Bible research, the JW Library program, let's minimize that. And look what I get. The dictionary is there. So it started the dictionary and put it in the right place. The dictionary is running and in the right place on the screen. Everything's right so far. The only thing I noticed was it when I booted, it did open Finder, which is interesting. It opened Finder, which is very curious. I wonder if it's got two windows open for that, because Ikuna was supposed to keep track of that as well. So let me just minimize the Finder and see what happens. Nope. That's the only copy of Finder that's running. But still, that I would score that like 100% out of 100. That's, or 100%, I should say, which means 100 out of 100. It's 100% in terms of the flawless way in which that worked. And not only that, I think that this FileZilla program up at the top here is better in its size now than it was before. I think it's going to work better as far as me not having to resize it every time. That's another thing I think has been improved by my latest endeavors. Whatever they were. And then, now, let's click Safari and see what happens. Okay, we're going to start Safari and see what happens. Here we go. Bang. Start. It's going to take a minute, a couple seconds. Now it's opening all the windows for Safari. Okay. One of which is private. I'm just going to make sure. Yeah, so if I look at this, this is one of my windows up above. Now, don't judge by the brightness of this. My monitors don't really look as bright as they do on cam. That's just the camera's distortion of it. This is beautiful, the way the terminal window does not it comes down as low as possible, almost as far as possible, without blocking that image on that web page. So that's the way I normally know that it's set right, and I can set my window. I see all my windows in Safari look correct. There's one over here. There's a window that's come up here for the Liquid Retina MacBook Pro 16-inch display. I've got my Philips up above. It's running my browser there. It's in the right place. Everything's right. Everything's correct. So it's this boot up process is flawless, and I was willing to, stake everything on this one boot today. I really believed it was going to work. Apparently, it did work flawlessly. So there's no need to rearrange windows every time I boot the system or any of that. Now I could the other thing about Ikuna, okay, if I show you this, look, it comes over here. That was unusual. If I look at preferences for Ikuna, when I open the preferences, the reason why Ikuna starts up when I boot is that it's got this check mark, launch at login. It's got that check, so you can uncheck that if you don't want Ikuna to start at login. But mine, and if you don't want it to show in the dock, you don't have to have it showing. If I say don't show in the dock, what happens? Where is it? I just clicked on it and it just disappeared. Preferences. Preferences just disappeared. Show in dock, okay. It's still showing it. But I have it in the dock anyway. Because I positioned it in the dock as a permanent place, so it's not going to go away just because of that check mark. But also, it's that's... Oh, short menu bar version. Okay, so I could say long menu bar version. What's that? Ikuna? Oh. I can have a smaller version of it in the menu bar. That's another option. Fantastic. Well, it seems to work backwards where it says short menu bar. It gets a longer menu bar version when I click on short menu bar. So that toggle switch might be set backwards, but it doesn't really matter as long as you know which way you want to have it. You can just toggle it. So toggle it to the position you want. It seems like it was set incorrectly, but this program is fairly new. It's under development. It's 0.6 is the version number. It works flawlessly for me. I can uncheck the short menu version and make it something that's much less visible in my dock. And I think I'll do that now. I mean, in my menu bar, sorry. Not my dock. It's going to be visible in my dock because I have it there. I have it down at the bottom here. Right there. I'm keeping it in my dock permanently. So, for now. And I can drag it out of there and drop it to remove it anytime. But it launches at login. I can check for updates. We check for updates right now. It just gets an error when it checks for updates. So I don't think we're going to be able to check for updates, but that's fine. We can check for updates manually. So it's a perfect program as far as I'm concerned. I don't care about the cosmetics of it. If it works flawlessly, who cares about whether they... have still got some debugging to do, and even if they never get the debugging done, who cares? It's working flawlessly. So that's this system. I'd call this 100%. I'd call it 1,000%, but you're not allowed to do that because there's only 100 in 100. But maybe we'll call it 1,000% successful because my browser, everything works, and I don't have any doubt that if Safari had been open. Even if Safari had been open, you see, it would not have restarted Safari when I booted because I didn't have that check mark on the reboot screen. When I go to shutdown or restart, if I go to restart, whoops, it was malfunctioning. If I go to restart, it will give me an option whether I want to reopen those windows or not. And it won't reopen the windows if I don't have that check. And I don't have a check because I don't want to open my windows when I start. Because I don't want to have those problems I had before, right? So all I have to do is run Ikuna and it will start everything except for Safari. And then I can boot Safari. If you had other browsers, I suppose you could just start them and they would recall their window positions also. So I don't see any issue with any of it. With anyone having any problems with this way of using Ikuna in Mac OS, and also using Jake Hilborn's Display Placer, that's the big thing about this. The Display Placer is so phenomenal. And if I look at my displays, you're not going to probably see this because it's, too small, but there it is. Yeah. These are my displays. These are my displays. Shown, the layout is preserved just like it was when I had it exactly how I wanted it. That's how I had it when I ran display placer space list and display placer list is the command that recorded all these positions and then feeds them back into the script that runs that login. So the script, it runs, and that's why these are oriented correctly. So I should never forget that this is not by accident. This didn't happen by accident. I had to do a lot of work here to get this to just look like it's effortless. It looks effortless, but it wasn't effortless to get it this way. So it was a lot of work, but it was mainly to just think. The other thing is, I thought of another way of looking at it, that I could think about it this way, that I solved all of Mac OS's display problems. I mean, multiple display, you know. I solved all of Mac OS's external display issues in one day of work. I solved it, all of it. So for all Mac OS users, if I'm being realistic, I think they all might now be able to work their system easily and without any complaints anymore. They don't need to complain about Mac OS. The problem didn't stem from Mac OS. I mean, it's not the OS job. It's not the job of the OS to preserve all the windows intact. Mind you, now if Ikuno existed for Linux, I might run Linux. Because does Ikuno exist for Linux? I don't think it does, though. How did I install Ikuno? It was a DNG file, I think. Let's just check. Oops. Yeah, that wasn't what I wanted to click on there. Let's see. Where's the DNG file? There we are. Ikuno? What is Ikuno? Oh, it's just an app. Okay. It's not a DMG file. Amazing. Is it running? So yeah, when I clicked on it, it ran. Here it is here. It's just a standalone program that you just click on, it runs. So you just drag it into your application folder or whatever. You copy it into your applications folder. When you try and run it, it gives you an option to copy it into the applications folder. But I can quit that because I already have a copy of it running. So you can run more than one copy of Ikuno at the same time. That's the other thing I just learned. But when I downloaded it, it's just a self-contained app. It doesn't require, which some Mac OS apps are. They don't require any installation. And some Windows apps are like that too. I know that. But you just click on them. You don't have to run any installation program. But this, there's no installation program for Ikuno. It's just a standalone beautiful app. Oh, I mean, it's so beautiful. It's so powerful. It's, okay, Display Placer by Jay Kilborn and Ikuno. They solve all of Mac OS's display, external display issues. Which, I mean, I learned that took me a full day, just about, you know, probably not 24 hours either. Maybe it was, you know, 18 hours to figure that out. But I also used, yeah. No, like I said, I have to reiterate, I also used Automator. I mean, Mac OS Automator is an application that comes with Mac OS. And I could click on application. I could choose application, create a new application, right? Add something to this application, right? Like, what am I thinking of? What am I trying to add here? Text. Well, that's input, maybe. Okay. No. Yeah, there was something I had to do to get a script in here. Oh, how do you get... Okay. how to add bash script to Automator. I'll just do a quick search and see what it is. There it is. So, select a document type, click choose, type run shell script. Okay. Oh, I should have just typed run shell script. Okay. So I just go up to the text section. Okay. I just go up to this text section and type, it's up right here. I got to move this. Okay. Right here, there's a little, an input box where you click on it and then you type. Type run shell script, right? That's what I typed. Let's see. Well, that's not where I do it. Okay. That's not the place I want to do it in. Okay. That didn't work. What I want to do is click new. There we go. New. I can click application. Choose. Run shell script. Well, there it is. Run shell script. It came up. Okay, it comes up in the list of options. I just click on it, and then what do? Double click it. So I just drag it. I drag that into my workflow or my application. There it is. So now it is there, and it's set for Bash already. For Bash, it's ZSH is the Bash version. Oh, I could have used bin Bash, but I used bin ZSH, which is the version of Bash that I have, is the ZSH version on Monterey. Happens to be that version of Bash, but I could have used bin Bash and it would have worked probably too. There's a lot of different versions of Bash here, it looks like. But anyway, you probably can't see it, but it's there's a lot of different. There's bin Bash, there's bin CSH, there's bin KSH, there's bin SH, and bin TCSH and bin ZSH, which is the one that I have. But it worked, right? When I enter my script. So then you just remove the word that's in the text part of it. You insert your script, and because it's already calling it a bin bash, we don't have to enter that first line of a bin bash file that you normally have to enter, which specifies bin bash, because it's already specified it in the program. So all we have to do is put in the actual script itself, and then we're good to go. So all we do then is we insert, I go to terminal, because I'm not running terminal right now, right? So I just click on terminal. Oh, yeah, I am. I am running it. So it did, you know what happened? I guess Ikuna did store a terminal. It just knew it was minimized or something, or it was just hidden. It was just out of sight, I think, behind the other windows. Anyway, so I would go up to Jake Hilburn's command, right? Or I could even say display placer list right now and run it, right? And I do that and it would say perfect. It looks like it ran perfectly that time. Display placer, it's telling me to copy this, but what's it using for hertz? It's using 100 hertz for the main monitor. So I could just drag this just because it worked. I'm not going to use this for anything because I've got a working system. But I just copy it from my terminal, which is, okay. Am I showing you that? No, right there, yeah. Right here, I just copied it. I just ran display placer list. It gave me the listing of the command I need. I'm copying it by dragging, selecting, and then command C to copy. I'm coming up back to my thing here, right here. Now, you know, coming back here to paste it in to the shell script and box, and there, and we paste it in, right? I can drag this to make it a little bigger so we can see it more. Hopefully, there it is. Now I can run it to test it. It's an error. Oh, because you know why? It can't find display placer because it doesn't have the pass for display placer, okay? So when I went back to run this, when I ran this, it just did a lot of things when it ran it. What was all that? Okay. It ran a lot of things, maybe for all the different monitors. It ran a lot of different tests. You know what? It's not really... So DisplayPlacer, it knows how to run it, but it doesn't have the path correct at the moment. I'd have to go to the path, so I'd have to go... Yeah. I have to go back to where I actually changed directory to the DisplayPlacer path. So I could find it again, whatever, somehow. I have to find the path of that program. The full path. There it is. That's the path. So I just copy that. Okay. I just copy the path up until the program name, right? I drag select. Okay. It's right. Is it here? Yeah. You can see this. I'm just dragging that one line, but not even the whole line, just the part about it, just the path. And then I command C, copy it, and I paste it in front of the name DisplayPlacer right here. Back up here again in the automated program, I just paste the path in front of the program name. Now I try to run it. And it runs! It runs, you see? So it needed to know the path. That was why it failed. Now it's running perfectly, so I could save this. I've just accomplished everything you need to do after downloading DisplayPlacer and downloading the appropriate command line tools and Xcode and all that stuff and installing all that stuff and installing DisplayPlacer using Homebrew. After you do all that, this is all you have to do is create this automator program. Save it now as an application. That's all we have to do. Go up. We just go up to this automator. We say save. Where is it? Export. Yeah, you have to export it or save. I don't think it really matters. Export or save. Export. We could say wherever we want to export it to. We could save it. In other words, anywhere. No, it's not. That's strange. Let's try saving it. Application. It's going to save it as an application. So saving it, not exporting it. Saving it as an application. We'll save it to the desktop like we did last time. We'll just leave it as Untitled 2. There it is. Untitled 2. It's on my desktop now. Right. Where's my hand? Right in the corner here. There it is. It's right there. It appeared on my desktop, so that means it's now an application, right? So now if I wanted to, let's say, stop that. Let's run Automator Open. Open Automator Untitled 2 on the desktop. It opened it, now I can try running it. And it runs, so the application that I stored on the desktop can be opened by Automator and it can run. So it works. So therefore we can run DisplayPlacer. And we can add this. If we wanted to add this, we just go to our users and groups in the right here. Login items right there. And we'd say plus. And it would give us an option to add whatever we wanted. We could go then to desktop. If we have it here. Where's desktop? It's not here. That's strange. I don't have my desktop as one of my options here. Normally, that's a little abnormal, isn't it? I've got two versions of downloads, too. Yeah, I've got two downloads files. My downloads folder, I changed my default downloads folder to a different location on my on an external drive. So all my downloads are on an external drive. And you can do that in Safari, I think, is where you do that. You change the downloads directory. But, I mean, it's in the preferences for Safari. But anyway, these are the apps, right? So I can just go find, I can find the desktop because I can go to my users, my name, and there it is, desktop. Select it, and I can add that. And there it is, Untitled 2 is now added to my login items. You see? So I added it to my login items, and it's now going to run every time I boot. So it would run the same app twice now because it's got the untitled version of it and the other version of it. But I can delete it now because we don't need it. It's gone. So I just deleted it from that list, and now I can just go back to the way it was. It's just, that's how you do it, using Automator. And Display Placer, and then Ikuna takes care of all the other windows. I can't say enough about it. It's just phenomenal. I solved all the issues with all macOS users using external monitors. This is your answer. This is a solution to your problems. And it's worth doing all the installation of the command line tools and the Xcode, because I used Xcode to simulate my iPhone. I simulated running iOS using Xcode. I had to install Xcode for that, I believe. And I had to install something else, which is called Android Emulator. No, I didn't use, actually, iOS. I used Android. Yeah, I used Android. I used Android Emulator, Android Studio, right? And then I emulated an Android using Android Studio. So it was like I was running an Android on my desktop. And that way I could run my iOS apps, which I couldn't run on my system at the time, but I ran them as Android apps instead. You can do that using Android Studio, but for that you need Xcode, I believe, in order to run Android Studio. You need Xcode. So, I mean, you can do these things, but Xcode is a useful thing to have. I just think it's not a bad idea to install it. Hopefully you've got... if you have a high-speed download, I think you'll have no trouble. I had a medium-speed download speed. I don't have a high-speed internet, so I've got sort of medium speed, 10 megabits per second. I don't have 100 megabits per second or 1,000 megabits per second like some people have. So, I mean, I had to do it at a snail's pace. It took me 2 hours or something to download Xcode, but... You can still do it, and you should do it anyway, because you only just have to let it download for 2 hours and just do something else while it's downloading. You can still use your computer and everything. But, I mean, install Xcode, and here it is in my apps right here. Xcode is right there. A little blue icon with a hammer. And then the other thing I installed was the developer's toolkit or whatever it was, right? I don't know that that actually shows up anywhere, but it needed to be installed in order to get the command line tools. So it knows it's installed anyway. Homebrew told me it needed it or something when I tried to install Display Placer. Well, first of all, it said I needed command line tools. And when it told me I needed command line tools, or when I tried to install command line tools, it told me I can't install command line tools unless I get this development toolkit or whatever it was, which was a thing that said it was going to take 200 hours to download, but then it took only 45 minutes in the end. So, but the thing is, on macOS, you never have a... It's not like Windows where you download something and then you can't install it. Everything I've ever downloaded on macOS, if it's something like it through Homebrew or anything like that, or any of the standard things that are provided by Apple, they never fail to install, in my experience. They never have a problem. So it's not like you're waiting 2 hours and then you can't get it installed. That has never happened to me. So I'm just telling you, in Windows, I had the totally different experience. I would do things for hours. I would work for hours and hours, sometimes even for days, to try to do something, and it wouldn't work because there's not as much standardization in Windows. It just wouldn't work on my computer, maybe, or perhaps whatever the reason, or just the software developers weren't as diligent as they are at Apple, or for whatever reason, Apple software is better. It's just better. So it's worth installing these extras, too, because at least if you need them, like in this case, too, because I have external monitors. If you only have one monitor, you don't need to do any of this. You just count yourself blessed that you don't have to do it. But count yourself blessed if you do have to do it, because it's so fantabulous, incredibly beautiful to have a system that works with multiple monitors, and now I can add any monitor. I'm confident I can add any monitor. It's not going to foul me up by adding a different new monitor that like the Dell did. And that was, I didn't expect that. I thought the Dell would work better than the old, than the previous Acer that I had running. You know, I have this light reflecting off the phone, and it's just driving me nuts. Okay. It's a snow day today. At some point, I have to shovel snow. I've got my ski pants on, and I'm gonna take some electrical tape, and I'm gonna goop it. I'm gonna stick it with goop onto my pants to make a permanent patch here, or maybe a piece of leather actually. That's what I should put on there. But I think electrical tape will be fine. But I'll goop it on there, and I don't think it'll ever come off. I've used tape on there, but I haven't gooped it on before. It'll never come off with goop. It's going to be there forever. So it'll fix these pants. Have a tiny hole. So that's it for this. I mean, this is just, I wanted to do the test of the boot. No, it's, you know what? It's not, we're not done. We're going to now go do an unboxing. I'm going to unplug this phone. I'm going to unplug the charger. I'm going to go plug it in the kitchen while I bring this out. We're running. We're up and running here in macOS. With four external monitors on an M1 Max MacBook Pro 16 inch with 32 gigabytes of RAM and a 512 gigabyte internal SSD. But I'm not running on the SSD. I'm running on an external 2 terabyte silicon power NVMe drive. That's what I'm running on. Through Thunderbolt 4. That's how I'm doing it. Okay, so. And it's working. That's the thing. It works. macOS is a reliable system. And for those people who are complaining about macOS or complaining to Apple that they can't run their external monitors, I have to tell them that. That's not the responsibility of Apple to get your external monitors running, because your external monitors could have all kinds of unexpected behaviors or awkward interface rules, right? Or methods. Your monitors might interface. They might have unusual interfacing technology. The way that they time, how long it takes them to connect to the computer, and all the things they do might be different in terms of the timing and everything, and the methods they use to establish contact with the computer. They could be slightly different. They are very different, for all I know. I mean, I don't know. They shouldn't be, right? They should be standardized, but everybody might be standardized. But Mac computers are not the majority of the market. This is the box, by the way. Here's the box. Just about. It's got the tarps, I think, maybe, and stuff like that. The Mac computers are not the majority of the market, so the monitor makers are not too concerned about Mac computers. They're more concerned about Windows computers. So it's not Apple's responsibility to fix every problem created by the monitor manufacturers. I mean, no, I don't think so at all. Not at all. That's not Apple's responsibility. So don't blame Apple. I got some polyester. I hope it's polyester. Yeah. Polyester rope. Here it is. Strong polyester. It's called strong polyester. 100 feet of rope. Strong polyester. Beautiful little sort of 3/16 maybe. It's a lot less than a quarter inch in diameter, but it's just I want it for tying up my tarps. I want to tie my tarps on. I think this will be strong enough to do it. I was going to use wire, but I've already injured my thumb trying to use wire and tie up the wire. I was putting my socks on this morning and trying to tuck in my pants, and just when I rubbed this, with any kind of pressure, it's extremely painful. That cut is it's very, very deep, apparently, or it's very, yeah, it's very painful to even touch it. Like, that's still why I have a splint on it, because I don't want to bend that knuckle, because it will open that cut wide open if I do. Actually, it's sort of above the knuckle. It's a little above the knuckle where the cut is, I think. So bending the thumb might not open the cut, but I need to make sure the tendons can heal. I mean, I have to make sure I don't do anything to it while it's healing. And it's going to take longer than I thought, because it's really painful still now, right? But it's much better than it was. I mean, I know it's better than it was. This is, I've got no one but myself to blame for that, you know, that injury. So there's 50 pack of eye screws. I need these eye screws. They're very useful for hanging anything. You need it to be an eye, not a hook. Because a hook, something will slide off of if you don't bend the hook over into an eye. So I want eye hooks. So these are eye hooks. There's 50 of them. I got, and these are, you know, they have a big enough hole in the middle of the eye hook. It's like a half an inch hole in the middle. You can use it. You can clip a carabiner onto it if you want. I mean, you know, it's big enough in the center there. I believe it's big enough for a small carabiner anyway. So that's useful to have. Then I ordered some interesting, these are furniture mounts for hooking a swing onto or something, but it's like a U-shaped, it's another eye hook, basically. It's just an eye hook in the shape of a U. And it has I have to do this with my left hand. How do I do it? Okay, where's the knife? Let's see. I'm in danger of cutting myself again. Okay. Can I open it? No, not opening. It's probably sealed. Oh, yeah, it's taped shut. Okay. That's what it is. It's taped shut. There. Good. I might have done it. Yeah. Yep. It's open. Okay. It's just one. It's just this kind of thing. It's a U-shaped hook, right? It's a U-shaped. It's a closed. It's an eye hook again, in the shape of a U. And they have two screws. So these ones, you don't screw them in. You put screws in them, with two screws. So you could be. It could be stronger because it's held with two screws, instead of just one, which the eye hook is. So that's. I bought just six of them. Yeah. I ordered six of these. I didn't order more than one package of any one type of thing. So I got one package just because I want to try them out. I wanted to see how good they are. That looks really good. It looks like this looks like stainless steel. No, I guess it's plated. I guess it's just plated steel. Yeah, it looks like plated steel. It doesn't look like stainless. So it's not completely rust resistant. Not as much as stainless steel. Neither is stainless steel exactly completely rust resistant either. Stainless steel, not all stainless steel is equal. Stainless steel will rust under certain conditions. Now here's another thing I just opened up. There's the other eye hooks I bought. The other eye hooks have a longer screw on them, and they're heftier. You know, they're bigger, and there aren't as many. I think it's 12 in that pack, something like that. So. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's more than 12. There's 13. Or maybe, no. No, there's 12. 7 and 5. Yeah, 12. I think. 12 eye hooks. Which are, these are the serious eye hooks, right? They're the ones I use first, but the other ones I'll have in reserve. In case I need more, I've got the 50 of the cheaper ones. So that's a very wise investment, I think. But now I know what quality I'm getting. Like, I know the quality that these are. I can order more of them now that I know the quality, right? So I mean, the smaller ones are fairly low quality. And these ones are fairly, you know, they're not going to be stainless steel. They're just plated, zinc plated, or, you know, galvanized or whatever. A plated steel. Now I've also got some more things. I got some, you're going to love these things. I got some carabiners, right? I got carabiners. I'll open this, and I'll open this. These other carabiners. I got two types of carabiners because I want to see what they're like. If they're any good, I can order more, right? But I don't want to buy them in quantity when I've never seen them, because that doesn't make sense. I could be unpleasantly surprised. I could end up spending a lot more money than I want to on things I don't even want. That's the other thing. You don't want to spend any money on something you don't want. But you know, if you end up spending more money because you think you want it, that's a bad thing. So you want to check it out. It's a bad thing if it turns out it's good if you did want it, but it's not good if you didn't. It's not good if it's not the kind of product you're looking for. Look at this. These have interesting rings. It's like they're designed for a key ring. It's got a coil ring that you can insert, put a key on that. It's a key ring, like that. And it's got several of those key rings, one for every carabiner in the bag here. I didn't expect that. That's useful. That's useful. Okay, so that is actually unexpectedly good. And look at this. Let's open one of these carabiners right now. I can't even use my thumb. I'm starting to use my thumb more, but I can't read. I've been using my fingers instead of my thumb. I've been using two fingers to pinch these two fingers together instead of using a thumb. And that's caused, I've damaged my cuticles when I'm sticking my fingers in my pants to pull my pants up and stuff. You know, it's not good for the hands to not have a thumb. Ah, this plastic is tough. I had to lift that with my teeth to get it started with my teeth. I'm sorry, Dr. Fong, but these front teeth are useful. The other thing, look at this. You see this? Look at that. That is a really, really good quality spring on that. I mean that's, it's just, they're just black. Well, people make these for, maybe sometimes for mountain climbing. I'm not sure if these are made for that. I doubt it, because for mountain climbing you have to pay a lot of money for a really good carabiner. But these are rated for 855 pounds, which doesn't surprise me. I mean, it's, steel is much stronger than that. It could support thousands of pounds, except it's got a spring in it and it's got a hinge, so that's not going to be strong, because it's not a solid piece of steel, right? It'd be thousands of pounds if it were not a hinge, you know. So I can't open this one. These Ziploc bags are no good if you don't have a thumb. You need two thumbs, you know, to open a Ziploc bag. Or your teeth. I don't really want to use my teeth to open Ziploc bags. So I'm going to cut. There, I cut my fingers. I used my two fingers again instead of the thumb. Yep, okay. So now we've got these other carabiners. Okay, are these sealed? No, they're not sealed. Good. They were in a bag, so they didn't need any tape. There it is. That's one of six. I've got six of these. I like having some carabiners around. They're just handy. For fastening doors, like, or tarps, or, you know, for fastening a tarp door, I mean, or that kind of thing, like I have for my carport. I've got these carabiners out there now. I'm using them. But the problem is they're going to rust, so I'm going to switch to polyester rope. Maybe I'll even get all my carabiners back off of there, try to refurbish them with some oil and rust remover to try to get the rust off them, get them back into service. I don't know. But that's a good spring. See, this will rust in no time, even though it's supposed to be, you know, it's a plated steel. It's not going to be stainless, but it will rust, right? even though the plating helps a little bit. Helps quite a bit, but it's just not, it's not good for, it's not capable of withstanding the outdoor elements, the especially not if you live by the ocean, of course, but I'm nowhere near that. I don't have any salt in the air here. So it's not going to be a problem as far as, you know, that kind of corrosion. So my two canvases also arrived. I'll show you those. I've got to open these. I think I've got to cut that with the scissors. My two tarps. Two additional tarps I ordered to go with the ones I already had. Oh, wait. Look. I got more of these iPlate. I have more. I didn't think I ordered two packages. I don't understand. I thought I only ordered one package. Well, maybe the minimum order was 12. That might have been true. But I don't know. But yeah, maybe it was ordered as a pair. A pair. Could have been a pair. Because I ordered no pairs as far as I know of anything. But it might have come as a pair. So I can't use my thumbs. It's very inconvenient to not have a thumb. So I mean, hopefully that teaches me a lesson to not expose myself to a risk like that with bare hands. It's just I can't put my thumb through the scissors even right now, so I can't use scissors, but I can use them with my left hand, right? But as I'm using them with my left hand, I gotta make sure I don't cut my right hand again, damage it again. And I don't want to cut the tarp, it's my left hand, right? I'm not used to it. That'll do. There we go. That's that one. Okay. So I only need to show one of these, I guess. Just to, these are good tarps. They're 6 feet by seven? Eight by eight. But they only measure 7 feet. Six, it's really 6 by 7, that's what they really are. Which is exactly what I need for my carport, so and I know what these are like. It's a nice tarp. Okay, so Stansport. I think it's a family-owned business too, which is always better. It's always better. Family-owned business is always better. Really, it really is. So I'm gonna tape and goop my pants. I just need a piece of black electrical because I don't think I have any color to match this. Piece of black electrical. And the goop. Right. And the scissors, which I'll need to use to cut this electrical. So, I don't know. Have I not used any scissors? Since I've got this injury, I don't think I have. I'm just going to try to fix this now. I'm going to get a piece of electrical tape. Right? Where is it? Here it is. Well, first of all, I need to make it square, or whatever shape I want it. So I've got to cut to make it square. That's one. One cut. And then I got to cut again the size I want, the length I want. Let's see. That's that. And I can't put it on there. I'm actually able to use my thumb. That's exciting. I'm using my thumb for the first time. It is exciting. Okay. Now let's get some goop and put it on. Either on the tape or on the pants, but I don't want it on the pants because if I put it on the pants, it's going to be, I'll put it on too big of an area, right? I'll put a little dab on the pants in the middle. Oop. It's a bigger dab than I wanted, I think, but anyway. I want to rub the tape over this goop, okay? I'm going to smear the goop onto the tape. Okay, that's enough goop. I think I'm just going to put the lid back on. I'm just going to try and do this. Okay, making a minimal mess. Let's see. It's always impossible to make zero mess. Probably. I mean, that's not the goal.
because you can never achieve that goal of zero mass. You're always, minimal mass would be a better, more realistic goal. And if we achieve zero mass, that's a miracle. But this stuff is messy. Trust me. It is messy. Okay. Also, I want to make sure that this scoop that's on the pants, is good. Okay, we gotta get some Kleenex. Let's get the box. Bring the box of Kleenex if you need it. Okay, this is gonna be good, I think, but I don't have the tape covered yet with the goop, so I got to try to cover the whole surface of it. With that, I have to use my other hand, which is a nuisance because, it's drying already. I got to get the goop on the whole tape surface. It dries fast, which is good. It doesn't usually dry this fast. It's because it was goop that was near the opening. It was near the actual opening of the tube. It was near the opening of the tube. Okay, so problem is, I got to stick it down. Right, it's tape. It's going to stick down, and it's got goop on it, so it should never come up. But I'm trying to not stick my fingers onto the tape while I'm holding it down. Right, so I got to rub my fingers back and forth, back like opposite directions like this. That will stick now, but I could put like another, you could do multiple layers of a patch here, but this will be perfect. Once this sticks down, there's no way. This is electrical tape. It'll stick to this polyester. And then it's got goop, which is an incredibly strong adhesive. But I don't know if I put enough goop, but I don't want to make a mess. So that's the reason I didn't put more. I don't want to give it any place for to get caught, any surface or edge. I don't want to have an edge on it. I don't want to have any edge at all if I can avoid it, but that's it. It's on there. Now I can just press it down with my finger or my left thumb here, and that's going to just be, that might last for, a few years or more. I don't know. It looks pretty color matched too. It doesn't really stand out much. But when it's done, I can rub the excess glue off the goop off of it. It'll come off when you have a thin layer of goop. You can just wipe it, rub it off. It rubs off. It comes by friction. You can peel it. It peels off, right? It peels off. It's very springy and very flexible glue. It's a goop. It's a glue. And it has a terrible smell. You don't want to smell it. It's a dangerous, not terrible smell. It doesn't smell terribly bad. It's very harmful, though. So it doesn't smell good. You know it's harmful when you're smelling it. It doesn't smell friendly. So you don't want to inhale it at all. And you don't want to use a lot of it if you can avoid it. So but for this job, you don't want to use a lot anyway. I don't know if this is going to stay. I have a feeling. Problem is the corners and the fact the goop wasn't wet enough. But I'll do it again, probably if it comes off, and I'll do it better the next time. So I've never gooped this on. I've used tape before. The tape itself held for like months, probably. Even without goop. So this might be. It's a question of what the edges hold like. How well the edges will hold, and whether I had enough goop on the edges and the corners. That's what I think is really the key there. So it could last for years, but I have a feeling I needed more. Oh, look, one of the corners already came up. Yeah, it's already peeling up. So what can I do? I can take it off and stick it on again. I think I'll take it off and stick it on again. We have to. Or at least this corner. I can just do the four corners, too. I can do four corners with a toothpick. That's what I can do. One at a time, I can do each corner. That's a lot less mess, right? And this is wet glue now. Using my right hand. Put it on the corner. Good. Stick it down. That won't come up anytime soon. I'm fairly certain of that. Okay, so let's get the other corner now. Oh, that one's already stuck down. Yeah, the other one's... Yep. Well, if the other ones are stuck down, I'll just leave them. I'll leave them be, and, I'll just redo... I'll redo corners as they need to be redone. You know, I'll just re-goop them. That's... or any edge that comes up. Here's an edge. Okay. I'm going to do the other side. Yeah, I'm going to do the other side. Here we go. Once again here. This whole side came up. So, I just put... the goop wasn't wet. That's good. It's good. Okay. I need to keep the lid on it because it will dry up. That's the problem with it. Good. Much better. Yeah. Seriously, that is going to be better. And I'll have to do the other front edge. This corner. I'm getting good at this. I'm getting good at it already. I haven't been doing it long either, so. It's got to be held down though, till it really gets a grip. Okay, that might do it. A little bit on this corner. Okay, now it's starting to get messy. I'm thrilled that I can use my finger, my thumb, I mean. This goop is really good. I don't know how well it works on polyester, I guess I have to admit that. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't stick to polyester. That's possible, but it works on every fabric that's not, I mean, on smooth polyester, it might not stick. That's the problem. It's smooth, right? And you can always pull the goop off of a smooth surface. So the more rough edges it has, the stronger it will bind on fabric. Now, if you have a really smooth surface of plastic or metal, it will bind to that really easily on a smooth surface, but... I mean, it's very strong. It's just, it won't be really strong because you can peel it off. Just, and that's maybe the problem here, too, that the polyester is so smooth that there's no bonding, you know, to the fibers. It doesn't bond to the individual fibers because the fibers are too smooth. That's what it is. They're woven so smooth. I think this is going to maybe work, though. I like it right now. I'm much happier with it now than when I first put it on there, so... We've got to make sure we tighten up the goop lid a little bit tighter so there's no air getting in there, and we're done. So,
Yeah, this was an unboxing. It was a Mac OS external monitor test, which passed with flying colors, using the amazing utility of Jake Hilborn and, you know, Ikuna, and Apple, of course, gets a lot of credit. I just can't blame Apple for something that they didn't do anything, you know, or that they didn't do anything to cause, or that they're not, for which they're not responsible anyway. You know, the idea that you're going to run external monitors on the Apple system. Now, I know that Apple will be ultimately working on this. If they want to go mainstream, they have to. They'll solve these issues because they have to. But the problem is they might do it in a way that's not. Just like with Windows, with Microsoft, what Microsoft had to do to get their operating system to work on all computers, on all Intel computers that you know, that wanted to run Windows or that were designed to run Windows, Microsoft had to, you know, make huge concessions, or, you know, they had to build a system that was really full of bugs. I mean, that's really what happens, because you've got to accommodate all these different computers. I mean, if Apple wants to make Mac OS work with a lot of different displays and, you know, external displays, and they want to make it compatible with people using any equipment with their Mac OS, then they're going to have to. I wouldn't do that if I were them, you know, if I were they, I should say. I wouldn't do that because I wouldn't try to do that. I can understand why they wouldn't want to do that. It's just wrong to make concessions to the mass market. That's what I mean, not the mainstream. We're not even talking about the mainstream. We're talking about the mass market. To try to meet the requirements of the mass market is, apart from being hopeless, which it is, it's not wise, because you end up with, well, look, I've got a chunk missing from my cupboard. The oak cupboard has a big chunk missing from it. That's terrible. When did that happen? Anyway, I can fix that somehow if I want. I'll be gluing splinters of oak into my oak cupboard or something. But anyway, that's the kind of thing I like doing. Actually, it's kind of a challenge. But anyway, if I were Apple, I would not try to meet the needs of the consumers in the mass market. What Apple needs to do is come up with products that are better than the other mass market products. That's all, and meet the needs of people who are, you know, looking for something better, you know, in terms of technology and how it works, and, you know, being environmentally friendly, which Apple tries to do also, although I'm not sure they're succeeding in that regard either. If you want to go mass market in any way, even on the smaller, I mean, Apple's not really a small company that at all. They're just not the biggest portion of the OS market, but they're pretty big, though. They're very big in the phones, so, and in the phone market. So what they're going to do with Mac OS? Mac OS is not the biggest part of the market, but Apple probably wants to get a bigger share of that market. But they won't have to try hard to do that. I think that's going to happen anyway, because it's a superior operating system. All they have to do. What I would want to see, I wouldn't do it, but what I would want to see from Apple would be more power in the OS, like more being able to do things more than one way, perhaps, but being able to find out, also being able to find out how to do things without having to Google everything, making it, the user interface, more powerful and more user friendly. Those are the only things that need to be improved in any OS, really, ever.
But I mean, it's already the most reliable OS. It's already. I would try and improve the user interface to prevent things like accidental clicks from causing you to accidentally drop a large file into another folder, for example, and then have it copy without realizing you didn't mean, you know, without you meaning to do that. I would try to prevent accidental things from accidental mouse slips from causing catastrophes in the OS. That's one thing that could be improved. A lot of options could be added to an OS. Like, you know, you've got the double click option or the single click option. You've got the ability to cut and copy. You can't even cut and copy in Mac OS. I can't cut a folder and then paste it somewhere else. Like, I have to copy it and then delete it from the original location. I mean, that's awkward. You know, it might be better security-wise. It is, but it's those sorts of things, not that specifically, but those kinds of things are ways in which Mac OS could be improved as far as just the user experience. That's all. But also, you can't make a Linux-based system more secure. It's just not going to happen. You know, I mean, so it's got that reliability that you can't top it. So, you know, that's not where it needs work. It just needs work on the user interface, making it more understandable from the standpoint of a new user, to where it's an easy thing to learn, so that they don't want to give up on Mac and go back to Windows the first time they try it. But you don't want to compromise anything at all, ever, in order to benefit some new user who might abandon you anyway. So, I mean, I'm not saying to change much in that sense. Don't try to be like Windows. That's the biggest thing. Make sure you actually differentiate yourself, that you actually differentiate yourself from Windows. Don't copy Windows. Because, you'll end up like Windows if you do that, and you'll end up like Microsoft, and you'll end up maybe having a large market share in the OS market, but you won't have a good system anymore. So, I mean, yeah, the Apple ecosystem, the Apple system between the different devices, how they work, it's good to have them interoperate and be able to use your phone and AirDrop and stuff like that. But, I mean, that stuff, I would not try to sacrifice the quality of each individual device. I would not try to get a market share by enticing people to buy all the different devices and interconnect them all. I would just build individual devices that work really well on their own, and make them interoperate, make them interoperable, so people can, which is what Apple's always been doing anyway. But that's the way I think they should continue to build things if they want to be in the market and gain market share. Then I think that's the way to do it. I don't think there's any other better way. I don't think there's a better way to gain market share other than producing quality products. Like, that there's no way that, at least no way that I'm interested in as far as buying an Apple product. I want a quality Apple product, that's all. I'm thrilled with Mac OS, and especially now that I learned about how to solve an issue I never had before. I never had the issue of monitor mix-ups, and other people have had a lot of issues with it, and now I've had it now, and I solved it. Hopefully I've solved it for forever with the Mac OS, but we'll find out, I guess, as time goes on. I'd like to know what other people think about it too, if it solves their issues. So the problem is, I don't think it'll be indicative. If somebody says, well, it didn't solve my issues, I don't know why. I won't be able to help them to figure out and troubleshoot their system
helps them figure it out. Because I'm not, you know, I'm not there. I'm not there to look at this. I'm not going to be, that's not my job. You know, I'm not interested in their own issues. I have my own issues. I've got enough of my own problems. I don't need to, I can't be helping other people solve theirs because that's their problem. They have to learn how to do it. They have to learn it themselves. And but everyone can get started on this at some point. They can maybe add an external monitor if they want to go that route eventually. And when they start doing that, then they can start. But before that, they can start learning about how to use scripts or how, you know, I don't even do compiling. I don't compile my own programs from GitHub. A lot of people compile them. I don't do any compiling. So I'm not a techie at all, really, although I'm very technical. I could learn how to do all that. But I'm just aware that would be a big investment of time that I don't have. So I'm not really interested. I've done programming in many different languages of computer languages. I shouldn't say many. I've used Fortran, you know, which is formula translation, the scientific computer language, and I've used Mumpty, which was a similar idea, and BASIC. I programmed in BASIC. I did a lot of BASIC programming, actually, maybe more than Fortran. But I know I've done a lot of Fortran programming, too. So I guess those are my main programming. No, JavaScript. Yeah, I've done a significant amount of JavaScript programming. So, I mean, I've done multiple language computer programming. I'm not averse to it at all. It's just I don't want to have to learn how to compile all these programs that you can get on GitHub. And so what I do is I use Homebrew to install them and stuff like that. You know, I'll take a route like that. But that's by far the preferred method for most people, I think, is to use something like Homebrew or some other method like that to do your installations through the terminal of Mac OS. And I've installed programs that way before, not just this time, but the idea of using a script in Automator, I've never done that. That's something new that I just learned, and I can use that again and again now, probably, using because I now know how to use Automator. Today's the first day I've ever figured out how to start an application from a new file, and then select, you know, run the shell script, and then get the shell script box open, and then paste the script in there. I did that before as a workflow, not as an application, but I didn't know I could do it as an application, or I'd never done it. I never used Automator at all. I later, what I did was I made a shell script using workflow, created a workflow, made the shell script there, and then I converted to an application the first time. That's how I did it. You can do that with Automator too. So it's powerful. It's plenty powerful for doing your programming. You can just get your scripts from somewhere, drag them and paste them. But if you're going to do any of that, you're going to have problems like I had. It wouldn't run. So I have to put the path in there, right? Or it wouldn't run because it couldn't find my monitor because I was trying to refresh it at too high a rate. Any programmer will have many problems. It won't work the first time you run it, usually. Any script is going to have an error, and it'll tell you what the error is, and you have to figure out how to solve that error if you're going to get the script to run. That's the way programming is. Any programming, including scripts, is like that. Now, the scripts are, you know, I've got the script that runs my timer. If I want a one-minute timer, it'll tell me 10% done, you know, 20% done, 30%, and so on. That timer runs in the terminal window, and I got that from someone. But it's a Bash script, so I've used Bash. I've used Bash as a programming language also. But I'm not very good in that language, but I've used it. So, so I've programmed in different languages. But every time I program something, the first time you try to run it, it crashes, usually. So you know, most people are not going to want to go there. Unless they're, you know, they have lots of time to debug all their scripts and programs, and you have to debug everything, and get it working could take days the first time you ever do it. And you have to be willing to take a break, go away, come back to it later, and try again from a fresh perspective, because sometimes you don't know why it didn't work. And when you're new to it, you have all the wrong ideas about why it didn't work.
like with computers, when you first get a computer, you know, you think it didn't work because it was the temperature in the room was wrong or something. You don't know why your computer didn't work, right? The first time you get it, if it doesn't work, something goes wrong, you blame all the wrong things because you don't know anything about computers when you first get a computer. So with programming, it's the same thing. You need to take time, go away and do something else, come back and think about it and try and talk with or read the forums without talking. Just read the forums written by other programmers and look at the problems they've had and how they got solutions from other programmers. But see what the common questions are in the forums about people who are doing the same thing you're doing by Googling it, finding the forums. And that will give you ideas, and that will correct your misconceptions about what's happening, too. So anyway, it's Ward Green, 15:30 hours, December 27, 2022. Bye for now.